Good afternoon, Radioland, and welcome to Endeavors on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby up at Simon Fraser University. We're also on the internet at cjsf.ca, where you can stream and podcast Endeavors, as well as all your other favorite CJSF shows, or you can also listen to us on TELUS HD channel 704. Today's show is comedy, 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 and more comedy. You'll first be hearing from the award-winning creator of Corner Gas and Hiccups. He also is currently on a nationwide comedy tour to promote his upcoming movie, which he wrote. Brent Butt will be joining us. And then in the second half, my second comedy-related guest is star of Archer, where he plays the witty and slightly creepy Dr. Krieger. Lucky Yates will talk to us about the show, its revamp, and just about the gosh darn weather down there in Atlanta. And our musical guest today, all the way from Kilmarnock in Scotland, it's Biffy Clyro. And they have a new double album called Opposites, and we're going to start with the song Opposite, one of their singles off that album. This is Opposite from Biffy Clyro.
To be with somebody else, I can't stop bleeding.
And that was Opposite from Biffy Clyro off their new double album, Opposites. And you'll be hearing from drummer Ben Johnston a little later on in the show. But right now, you probably know my first guest as the creator of the hit comedy series on CTV, Corner Gas, which ran for 6 seasons and won a variety of awards, including 7 Leo Awards, 9 Canadian Comedy Awards, and 6 Gemini Awards, as well as the show Hiccups, which has also won 5 Leo Awards, 6 Leo Awards, actually, and Brent Butt himself has won 4 comedy awards. He's also the writer and star of the upcoming 2014 film No Clue, being released in March, and he's currently on a nationwide comedy tour, Almost a Movie Star, to promote it. Brent Butt joined me on the phone last weekend to discuss. On the phone with me now is Leo Award-winning actor and comedian Brent Butt. Hello, sir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, you're just about to embark on this nationwide comedy tour, not yet a movie star. When you're doing a show or a set of shows like this, how would you say it differs from doing a TV show such as Corner Gas?
Well, they're very different animals. I mean, the end result is the same in that you want to produce something that makes people laugh. But, you know, stand-up is one of the things that I really love about it is that it's a real solo endeavor. You know, you're flying by the ass of your own pants, and it's very immediate. And whatever you kind of think you want to say, you just say. There's no approvals process, and there's no waiting. The audience lets you know right away whether they think it's funny or not. So it's very immediate, and it's just you out there. Whereas TV and film is very, very collaborative. It's very much a team effort. Even if there's one person kind of driving the creative, you have to rely on the talents of a lot of skilled people.
How would you describe your writing process for stand-up?
For stand-up, it's, you know, I've always just carried like a little pad and pen with me, or now I use the voice memo on my phone a lot. And if something strikes me as funny or strange, I just kind of make note of it. And then I usually sit down. There's a bit of time where I sit down, try and write it out a bit. But then it's really a matter of taking it up in front of people. I pop up on stages at comedy clubs around town or comedy nights at little pubs and stuff. Just kind of pop up unannounced, do 5 or 10 minutes and try out new stuff. Because that's really where, you know, you can only be so funny at your kitchen table at 2 in the afternoon, right? You've really got to get up in front of people.
What makes you laugh?
A lot of different things. I mean, different things is really, that's the answer right there. Something that I find to be different and original and unique, something that catches me by surprise. I always like when a comic says something that I know, if I was given 1,000 years, I never would have thought of that angle on it. That's what always hits me. But I mean, you know, I laugh at stuff that's clever. I laugh at stuff that's goofy and stupid. You can't really put a finger on why something clicks, you know?
So, the film, No Clue, where did this idea for the film start for you?
Well, I'm a big fan of murder mysteries, big fan of detective movies and, you know, murder mysteries in general. And, I just kind of started writing out this scene, that I had in my mind and kind of went from there. I liked the scene. I liked how it was shaping up. So, you know, and there were people that were interested in knowing if I wanted to make a movie. And I liked this idea that I was writing. So we just kind of started pursuing it. And I took about a year to write the movie, maybe a little less to get the first draft down. And people liked the script. And so from that point, it became an active endeavor. But it really just started with me sitting down and writing for the heck of writing, you know, which I do quite often.
Do you think that this could open the door for, shall we say, the more unconventional leading men?
Could be. I mean, that's one of the great things about comedy is that, you know, it's really not the domain of dashing, handsome individuals. Comedy is the great kind of open door where it's like, we don't care about anything as long as you're funny. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a long list of, you know, leading men before me in the world of comedy who were not Clooney-esque, let's say.
Working with this cast, your two other main cast members are Amy Smart and David Koechner. How did you get them to come aboard?
Well, Koechner, I had some personal acquaintance with. I wouldn't say we were pals, but we had done some live stuff before, and we got along really well when we did that. So I just kind of reached out to him via Twitter, actually, and just said, hey, I wrote this thing, and I think you'd be funny in it. And he wrote back, said, I'd love to work with you again. So I sent it down to his agent, and we went from there. So I had a little bit of history with him. With Amy Smart, it was more a case of, you know, we kind of made a list of people that we thought could do a really good job with this role. We had to find somebody who could kind of play two sides of the coin. One, be a very, you know, vulnerable, doe-eyed damsel in distress, and then the other side of the coin, you realize she's actually quite dark and dangerous. There's a very dangerous side to her. So, and plus we had to find somebody that had, you know, a bit of chemistry with my character, and she just nailed it.
So, your tour is obviously called Almost a Movie Star, and in today's day and age, especially with social media, there's definitely a worship of celebrity and celebrity culture. What are your thoughts on that as a comedian?
Well, I don't think it's any more today than it was, you know, in 1920. You know, like Mary Pickford and Charlie Chaplin were kind of, you know, people were fascinated by celebrity. I think you can go back to the dawn of time almost. So it's not, this is nothing new. And, you know, social media only allows people to kind of connect and talk about it a little easier. But the whole notion of, you know, even pre-publishing, even before people could be, you know, share massively in any kind of social form or mass-produced form, they were still fascinated by royalty and fascinated by, you know, world travelers. They would read exploits on them and tell stories about them. So there's something in us that makes us want to find out about certain people. And you know, I don't know what that is, but I think it's just something in us as humans. I don't think social media's got anything to do with it, really. It's just a different way of connecting.
If you had the power to change one thing in the world, what do you think it would be?
Wow, that's a deep question. You know, I would probably, if we're talking broad strokes, I'd probably, if I could find a way to make people think twice before doing something that was overtly cruel to somebody else or something else, that's what I would change. Cruelty is one thing I don't get. I can kind of, you know, I understand greed. I understand robbing a bank to get money. Like, I understand this stuff. But just cruelty for the sake of being an a-hole, like, I don't understand that. That's something we could do with that.
So, what is the butt pod?
The butt pod is it's a lovely idea. So far, I've done very little with it. I just thought it'd be fun to do a podcast in which I talk to other comics about comedy and what's going on in their life. And to make it not, you know, a lot of podcasts are like 2.5 hours, right? It's just a lot of guys high on weed talking for 2 hours. Saying, look how entertaining we are. And that's hot. That's great if you are also high on weed. But if you're not, it can be a little, you know, they could really use with an editing process. So I thought, why don't I make a podcast that's like max half hour? And it would be an easy listen on a commute. So it's still something that I like the idea of doing. We put one up on my website, brentbutt.com. I talked to Peter Kalamas, and well, people liked it, but I've just kind of been busy doing other things, busy doing things that actually pay the bills, right? So it's hard to find the time, but it's definitely something that I still want to do because I really enjoy it.
So you mentioned that this is about, you know, you as a comic talking with other comics. So who would you say are some of your favorite comics out there today?
Boyd Banks, Mike Wilmot, Derek Edwards, Graham Clark, John Buehler, Sean Proudlow, Erica Sigurdsson. Oh, it's a long list. There's a lot of very funny guys. I think that we're kind of in a... I'm really impressed at the next generation. Like, there's a wave of comics that maybe started doing stand-up in the last 2 or 3 years who are really original, really smart and funny, and you know, it's a great combination of smart and goofy, and it feels like a unique voice that's coming up, and I'm really looking forward to what's coming down the pipe stand-up wise, like when these guys who've been doing it 2 or 3 years really hit their stride and really get good, because you know, there's some young guys that are really busting me up now when I go to the clubs to try out my stuff, and you see young guys I've never seen before, and they're really funny and really fresh and original. So I think in the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to see a lot of guys take off.
We always hear stories about how, I think it was Mike Myers that said that there's two things that Canada has, hockey and comedy. What do you think it is about this country that breeds so many good comics, and what about the Canadian way of life makes it apt for humor?
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, I don't know if I buy into the premise. I hear this a lot, the whole notion of, you know, Canada's a very funny nation. We produce a lot of comics. I don't know if we produce any more than any other country. We happen to be next door to the largest show business marketing machine in the world, so we have an opportunity to pop across the border and get into that mix. So you end up with your Mike Myers and your Jim Carreys and John Candies and stuff like that. But I mean, really, I don't know if we did any study, are we any funnier than anybody else? I don't know. I don't know that we are. So I don't know that I buy the premise. I think we're as funny. I think we're at least as funny as anybody else. But I don't know. I mean, maybe we have a bit of a different bend or a different perspective because we are kind of a byproduct of, you know, our English ancestors and our American cousins next door, the loud show business machine. And so maybe being that kind of stuck between those two large empirical entities has affected our point of view to some degree, but I don't know if there's, yeah, like I said, I don't know that I buy the premise necessarily.
You mentioned people like Jim Carrey and Mike Myers, and we're seeing a lot of, not just comics, but a lot of Canadian actors and people in the entertainment world go across the border to find more opportunity. What do you make of that they have to go to another country to find more work that pays better?
Yeah, I don't know that... I mean, it makes sense to go to this large... Like, if you're trying to get into show business, and right across the border is the largest show business machine in the world, it makes sense. Like, I understand. I don't begrudge anybody anything going down there and saying, well, you know, let me take a swing for the fence here and see if I can become the next Rachel McAdam, right? But, you know, so if that's what you're looking for, if you really are just looking to hit a home run and be a giant showbiz star, then I don't begrudge anybody that. Here, it's just a smaller market, you know, so it makes sense that the money isn't as huge, the opportunities aren't as plentiful. But, you know, it's kind of hard for me to comment because Canada's kept me really busy. Like, I was, you know, busy doing stand-up from the time I started in 88. Mind you, I started during a real comedy boom, so I was kind of lucky. But and then, you know, I just kind of kept working and writing stuff and able to get stuff on the air. And so, you know, I consider myself very fortunate that I've been able to make a living here at home without having to travel. And my goal has always been to stay here, work here, but ship my product around the world. You know, I've always wanted to be here making Canadian product, and not ignoring the rest of the world, not ignoring the market, but trying to get into it from here. That's been my goal. And we had some success with Corner Gas. We were able to ship that to 26 countries that aired in. And so, you know, hopefully my movie No Clue will also, we have international distribution for every country on the planet. So we'll, so personally for me, that's my goal. Stay here, do my work here, but tap the whole market.
How did growing up in a small town, would you say, inform your comedy at all, if at all?
I'm sure it did in some way. I mean, I think anybody is to some degree a product of their, or a byproduct of their environment, right? Your environment affects you in some way, whether you're a big city guy or, you know, a small town guy or whatever. But, you know, I don't know to what degree it affected it, because I know a lot of, you know, a lot of my friends who grew up in small towns, none of them got into show business, right? None of them said, yeah, I'm going to be a comic because I'm from a small town. So, so I don't know. I mean, I think it has to be in you in some, like, I remember being a little kid in the summers when we were in summer holidays, we were home in the afternoon. There was a daytime talk show called the Alan Hamill Show, which later became the Alan Thicke Show. And it was, every now and then they would have a stand-up comedian on there. That was my first exposure to stand-up. So I remember I'd be out playing with my buddies, 12 years old, and I would, at 1 o'clock when the show came on, I would leave whatever we were doing. They'd be like, hey, where are you going? I'm running inside to see the opening credits of the Alan Hamill Show to see if there's going to be a stand-up comedian on. If there isn't, I'll come back out. So I was just driven by it for whatever reason. And I don't know exactly how my environment shaped my my taste or my perspective on things. I'm sure it did in some way, but I couldn't tell you how.
So you've been doing stand-up for 25 years. Do you have one story from the road or from your days of touring, that one memory that really sticks out for you?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I started this tour a couple nights ago in Ottawa. That was the first show of the tour. And somebody in the crowd asked me what my worst gig was. And I recounted the story of playing this biker bar. It was a roadhouse somewhere between, it was way off the highway, somewhere between Toronto and Hamilton. And myself and the other comic, Chris Finn, we didn't know that it was a biker bar going in. And so he was in a suit, and I was in like a green sweater, you know. And the wall of hatred that came at us, you can just imagine. And we were supposed to do 45 minutes each. He did 15 and bailed. I went up. They were hating my guts. And actually, somebody walked up to the front of the stage, pulled out a big Bowie knife, like a 9-inch Bowie knife, dragged it across his throat, and then pointed at me. And it was so beyond, I was so outside of myself. I actually yelled at the guy. I said, really? You're going to kill me because you don't think I'm funny? That doesn't seem like an overreaction to you. Where would I get the cojones to do that?
Well, the movie is No Clue, which opens March 7th, and the Almost a Movie Star Tour is on now. You can check brentbutt.com for dates, times, and cities. Brent Butt, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, cheers.
Okay, bye-bye.
And once again, that was Brent Butt, and I reached him on the phone from Vancouver. Coming up now, we have another song by Biffy Clyro off their album Opposites. This is Pocket.
I got a couple of bags on my back. My hair tied up, I'm starting to crack. My head against the wall and floor. The blood keeps coming and I just can't take anymore. I just can't take anymore. I'm just waiting for a change in your barriers. Cause in my heart I hesitate with what I'm thinking of. I've been swimming for 100 miles. My arms getting sore, but I'm not turning back till I'm faster than a whale or a shark. Trust me now, brother, time to win a new shark attack. Win another shark attack. I'm just waiting for a change in your barrier. I'm just waiting for a change in your barriers. 'Cause in my heart I hesitate with what I'm thinking of. 'Cause nobody loves a spaceman and nobody loves your friends. You look at me like I'm crazy, but you get what you deserve. When suddenly the world stops, you think I'm not right. Lieutenant, baby, I'm probably in your pocket now. I'm probably in your pocket now. I'm probably in your pocket now.
And that was Pocket from the album Opposites by Biffy Clyro. And I spoke to drummer Ben Johnston on Saturday to discuss Opposites and Scottish music. I'm here with Ben from Biffy Clyro. Hello.
Hello.
So you have a new album out, Opposites. Which is actually a double album.
Yes.
When you guys were putting this album together, did you know early on that it was going to be a double one?
Fairly early on. I mean, we had like 45 songs to choose from. After a period of incredible prolific writing from Simon, he wrote these... they were all great, that's the thing. There was 45 songs and they're all great. So at that point, you're starting to think, yeah, this is time to do a double, and it was our sixth record, so again, I think every rock band wanted to do a double at some point, and it felt like the right time to do it. So we whittled down the songs, and it was so difficult to get them down to even like 25, you know.
Yeah.
We ended up managing to cut it down to 20, and two albums of 10, and yeah, so we kind of got to tick that box and do the double.
Is the mentality for you different when doing a double album because there's that much more?
Yes, I think it is. You can approach it a little bit more differently in terms of you've got more time to kind of show different sides of the band and express different ideas, so you can pace yourself a little bit more with a double. And I think, bizarrely, I think we felt a little bit restricted in the past doing single albums because we never get to show every single angle every side of the band. So get to the double was really a lot of fun, and it felt liberating to, you know, to have that much time to tell a story. So it's cool.
On a double, how much room is there for evolution and variety compared to a normal 12 songs?
So much more. To the point, almost like I want to always just do double albums now. But I think due to the kind of fairly strenuous recording situation, you know, I doubt we'd do it again right away, but it is amazing fun getting to do it. You know, the instrumentation that we were afforded on this album was incredible. You know, we've got every instrument you could think of, even bagpipes and tap dancers and kazoos and fucking everything. So yeah, we really got to spread our wings and have a lot of fun on it.
How would you describe the writing process for you guys as a band?
Up to this point, generally it's just been Simon that writes the songs. He writes them late at night on an unamplified electric guitar when his wife's sleeping, and he'll come to the practice room with these songs, and he's just become an amazing writer over the years. You know, he's been doing it since he was a teenager. We've been a band for 20 years now, and that's the kind of way we do things. And he brings them in, generally shows James the chords first, and I'll sit and have a listen, and then we'll just try and get through the songs and see where they take us, you know, and we'll just keep changing them until we're all happy with them. Of late, we're trying to be a little bit more collaborative and trying to, James and I are trying to bring ideas in as well, and then start from there and work with that. And maybe in this next album, you'll hear a bit more of that. But up to this point, it's been pretty much Simon writing songs, and then we make them loud together.
How much better is he now than when he was 17?
Just incredibly. I mean, it seems like he can take anything and turn it into gold. You know, he's just got a real keen ear for melody, and his lyrics as well have just become incredible. I don't think when we started, lyrics were massively important to us. It was always the last thing that we think of, but I think Simon really takes care of his lyrics now, and songs always mean something. You know, I've got nothing but massive respect for his abilities.
Given that you guys started the band when you were so young, why do you think you've been able to stay together so long?
Just because we're doing it for the right reasons. It's so loud in here. I think a lot of bands, they form a band to like, get chicks or make money or be cool or something. We only ever wanted to make good music, you know. We wanted to make the sort of music that we would buy, the sort of music that we go and watch, and we've kind of maintained those rules, and that's the only rules we have. Is if the songs make the hairs on our neck stand up, then that's good enough for us, and that's it. We don't try and conform for anybody else. We never ever think about our fans. We only ever think about ourselves, and I think that making music should be a selfish pursuit, and that's how we've kept it. So basically, it's very simple. Make music you love and care about the music, and don't ever try and think about any of the other exterior things, and you should be able to keep going. And also because we're friends, you know.
Yeah.
We were friends first. James and I are twins, and Simon was our friend at school, so it's a tight unit. And I think that you have to get on with your band members. If you don't, you're not going to last long. And we see it so many times, like bands that maybe advertise for members to join. It works for a little bit, and then their personalities clash and it falls to pieces, but we're all friends first and foremost, and we still hang out after every show and have fun, so that's a really important part of it.
What would if you could look back, what would you say to your 16, 17-year-old self now?
God, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't change anything, really. I think our evolution, albeit kind of quite slow, has been a really healthy one. I think if we had got signed right away to a major label and done these big records right away, I don't think we would have been ready for it. We might have all turned into complete assholes, and who knows? But I'm just glad that we are the way we are, and we're still going, and we still have the hunger. So
yeah.
I don't think I would change anything. What would I say to myself? I don't know. You're going to go bald, by the way. That's what I'd say.
Now, you guys are Scottish. I love Scottish music. I love Celtic music, fiddle, step dancing, you name it. I'm in love with it. I got some Scottish in me.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, you know, bagpipes and tap dancing and all that.
Yeah.
Do you actively try to infuse some of that Celtic culture into your music?
Not actively at all. Not in any way. I think that's just entirely subconscious that it has happened. I mean, certainly I'm just thinking, well, even before we put the bagpipes in, that the song felt Celtic, and we've had a number of songs over the years that people have said that it has a real Celtic feel. I think that's just in our blood, to be honest.
Yeah.
We haven't even really been big fans of kind of British music growing up. It was always American stuff that we took our influence from. I think that's just come from our bone marrow, to be honest.
Now, Britain, Great Britain as a whole, and North America, how they do have a lot of similarities given their shared history. What do you notice about the culture when you come over here compared to in your homeland?
People are more outgoing here, I think, you know, a bit more upfront about things. They know how to have fun. They know, I guess, we do it back home as well in Britain, but people aren't scared to tell you what you think, what they think here of you, which is refreshing, you know. I think it's good to be honest. Certainly at gigs, there's a lot of kind of whooping and hollering and stuff. You don't get as much of that back home. You, obviously, people cheer at the end of a song, but during a song, you get a lot more crowd activity over here. And I think, like you say, there's a lot of similarities. I think the big drinking culture on both sides of the pond there.
Yeah.
You know, Canada probably is a lot like Scotland in that respect.
Who has the better weather?
Canada, for sure. You guys have seasons, you know. Like Scotland is just pretty, well, I'll use a Scottish word, it's dreich all the time. It's just drizzly and grey and you know, you can never plan to play golf or you can never plan to go to the beach or anything. It's, yeah, the weather sucks. I much prefer Canada because at least you have, I know it gets like really fucking cold, but at least you also have a good bit of sunshine. So I think almost any climate out with the west of Scotland is the place to be.
We were talking sports before the interview.
Yeah.
Curling, golf or football?
Well, for me, it's football, soccer. That's my thing. To watch, to play golf, I would say. I'm a very keen golfer. Play golf on days off, play golf from at home. My dream is to join the seniors tour after the band, when I turn 50 and maybe if the band's not touring anymore, I'd go on tour and play golf because I absolutely love golf. But yeah, when it comes to watching sports, I've got my team at home, Kilmarnock Football Club, and I'm a massive supporter and I go to as many matches as possible.
And finally, quickly, favourite song off Opposites?
Oh God, that's like picking
either album.
It changes for me kind of daily, weekly. I'm going to go for Spanish Radio, I think, just purely because it's a song that on paper should not work. It's a mariachi song that's in 5/4, that's also heavy, and there's so many things that shouldn't work, and somehow we pulled it off, so yeah, I'll go for that.
Well, thanks so much. Cheers.
Thank you, man.
My next guest currently voices the deliciously creepy Dr. Krieger on the hit FX animated show Archer. You may also know him from Extacle on Frisky Dingo and the Dungeon Master from the Food Network show Good Eats. In addition to voicing Dr. Krieger, he's also the model for Ray Gillette. In addition to all his awesome voiceover and acting work, he is a member of Dad's Garage Theater in Atlanta with co-star Amber Nash, and is also a big fan of puppets and is quite a good puppeteer. And who knows, maybe we'll see the Lucky Yates puppet show coming soon. He is Lucky Yates. And I spoke to him earlier today from snowy, snowy Atlanta. So I'm joined on the phone now by the voice of Dr. Krieger himself, Lucky Yates. Hello, welcome.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. This is very exciting.
How does it make you feel, you know, you play this such absurd character and now you're known everywhere for it?
Man, I think it's the best thing of all time. I really would not want to play another character on the show. I don't even know if on television. I love Krieger so much. It, you know, I'm a big science nerd too and a big geek, so everything that he does, I'm just so all about. I think it's so great.
Are you more proud to be known as Krieger or to be known as the Dungeon Master?
I get a lot of Krieger versus Dungeon Master questions. We do these live shows. I am equally as proud to be both of them because I think they both stand alone on their respective shows. You know, one just being a cooking show and the other being an awesome animated TV show. But I love them both, and they both speak to me in the same way I just described Krieger speaking to me. So yeah, I don't know. Tie. It's a tie.
What was your reaction this season when Adam and Matt said, okay, you guys are no longer government agents, you're now drug dealers?
I thought it was the greatest thing of all time. The whole cast, pretty much, we universally were like, this is so awesome. And, you know, everybody's like, we'll see if everybody else likes it. But it's just so fun because the show is still the same. The characters are the characters. And, you know, the heart of the show and really the basis of the show is the relationship between these goofballs. And so, you know, I think Adam did a genius thing instead of, you know, it being a desperate move and like, oh, no, ratings are slipping and people are... He completely threw out everything and we started over with this new occupation and, you know, it's driving things forward and, as well as honoring the history of all the stuff we've been through. It's such a great evolution. I hope we keep changing things up every couple of years. It would be so much fun.
How do you think Dr. Krieger can put his skills to the test as a member of a drug cartel?
So, you know, we're holed up in the Tunt Mansion, and, you know, Krieger has already put his skills to use hooking the house up in what he says is security, but really it's mostly bathroom cams. So, you know, he's a tech nerd on top of being this weird science and biology nerd. So it's already come into play in that he's able to set up all these cameras. And there's a couple of great examples coming up of him doing things to try to help the group along. Man, I'm so excited about the end of this season. We just recorded the 12th out of the 13 episodes today, this morning. And there's some Krieger stuff coming up that I could not have... I wouldn't have dreamed to ask for something this awesome to happen to that character, and it's happening. So, pretty...
That's another thing that strikes me that's fascinating about animation. Unlike other TV shows where you're sort of... where they're shooting as the season is airing, You guys tend to finish quite far in advance of when... the final episode airs a lot of the time.
Yeah.
What's that dynamic like for you, knowing that you know how the season's going to end well in advance?
Oh, it's great. It's great. It's a fun experiment in keeping my lips zipped. because, you know, I who doesn't love gossip and who doesn't love sharing a secret? But it's also, you know, it's such a great, precious secret. And especially, like, the stuff coming up is like, man. This stuff is so good, I cannot possibly tell. So, but you also know you don't want to ruin it for anybody, you know. So,
yeah.
As soon as word leaks somewhere, it's going to get out there, and then it's all over. In fact, there's even a deeper secret in the stuff I'm already talking about that is happening to Krieger. There's even a deeper secret that nobody knows except for Adam Reed and myself.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Take us through a little bit of the recording process. I mean, I know you got yourself and Adam and Amber, I believe, down in Atlanta, and you've got a couple of you in New York and a couple of you in LA. How does it all work?
We go into the booth alone. You're in there with a script on a headset, and you deliver. You know, each line you go line by line. And you do it several different ways, but also, you know, Matt Thompson, the executive producer, is usually out outside the booth. Sometimes Adam will be there if he's not too busy writing. Our producers, Casey and Mark, are out there, and they're all wonderful directors, and they're all great at giving notes. So, you know, you'll do it a few different ways, and they'll direct you pretty specifically as to how, you know, this thing should roll out. And it's quick and dirty and not a lot of fun at all. It's fun because, you know, we get to read these hilarious lines, but we don't get to interact with anybody else. If anything, one of the producers will read us in from, you know, with the line before, just so we get an idea of what we're reacting to or questions that we're answering and how we're answering them. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's just this boring, you go and sit in a room alone, looking out a window at your bosses and looking at a script, and then you're done. Like, I work like 15 minutes.
So, this is a fun game that some people like to play sometimes, but out of the Archer actors, who would you fuck, who would you marry, who would you kill?
Oh, great. The whole show. Let's see. I would... Oh, man, this is a good one. Really? You had to do this to me. I would... Kill is going to be really, really hard, because we're all such good friends. How do I have to go with the main cast? Am I sticking with the top tier? Or am I allowed to go, like, in the other employees that are kicking around?
Let's do this top tier if you want, but I will include Woodhouse and Gillette.
Okay. And these are the actors, not the characters, or the characters?
That's up to you, actually. I'll let you play with that one.
Oh, shit. Well, if it were the actor... Or let's go with characters first. Characters are a lot easier. I would fuck Cheryl Carroll in a heartbeat. I would marry Lana. And I would probably kill Cyril. Like everybody else would probably kill Cyril. Because he's such a little nudge.
That's probably a pretty good answer, yeah.
Now, the actors, you know what? It's a big toss-up between Aisha and Judy for the fuck or marry, because I would love either of those situations. So I really is a roll of the die on either of those. They're interchangeable, and they hold no, you know, nobody edges out the other for any reason. Killing. I would kill Amber Nash because I know her the best.
Okay.
And you keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
All righty.
Also, Pam's been standing in Krieger's way for years.
That's true. That's very true. She has to go.
Out of here.
So now you're down in Atlanta, which obviously is where the show is headquarters, and a lot of people might not think of Atlanta as a comedy haven. But I know that you and Amber are both involved with a local theater company down there. What is the arts community like down there?
Oh, it's amazing. Atlanta is such a great place to create art of any kind. It's a weird city. I've been down here for like 20 years, and I'm not really in love with the town itself. Because its identity is all over the map. It's kind of a corporate headquarters and kind of a sports town. And it's the hip-hop capital, but that doesn't speak to the entire population, so it's not something everybody gets behind. So it's like this weird mishmash of just everything and anything. But because of that, it's an amazing place to create any kind of art, especially like live theater. It's so... cool, not only the, you know, sort of the big houses in town that, you know, pay you a nice paycheck every week when you're doing a show there, but all of these small little ragtag independent little, you know, wow, that guy over there is doing this weird cool show in this theater he built behind this giant house he lived in. And, you know, and then he packs it out, and everybody loves it, and it's a huge buzz. So the art scene down here is amazing, and we passed this tax law. You know, there's these tax breaks down here in the States. And so there are films being shot here constantly. And so now it's becoming this weird, like, almost Hollywood of the South, because there's always at least two or three big films being shot here. So, you know, there's stars running around and everything like that. But because... the art scene and everybody here is so cool already because they're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, the actors that come here love it because they can go and hang out in bars or go see a show and nobody makes, like, a huge fuss about it. It's just this cool, like, all right, you're here. That's great. It's great. Atlanta's a really, really cool place to create art.
We were talking a little bit before the interview about the weather you guys have had down there and how everyone's freaking out about the snow. And I got to say, up in Canada, we're kind of laughing at it a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, I grew up in Detroit, so I laugh at it along with you, all of us great Northerners. It's a combination of a lot of problems. A, I mean, if it starts raining down here, drivers immediately lose all sense of composure and have lost anything they've ever learned about driving. All of a sudden, it's like there's no rules anymore. So when it snows, it's especially crazy because it doesn't happen all that often, and so the panic really starts. And then this last go-round, we had a storm a couple of weeks ago that the city shut down for a couple of days with people stranded on highways for 24 hours because our city and state governments are just like, they never know quite how to react in advance. I'm just like, I don't know, this thing's coming through. Like, we're supposed to get a big ice storm in the next couple of days, and my prediction is that it's going to be the same thing again. We're not going to be prepared, everything's going to glaze over, and then it's going to be chaos. But also, being in the middle of that is pretty hilarious and fun, because, you know, I can get out there and go and drive around and do all kinds of stuff that nobody can, and so it's like this Omega Man empty city that everybody's hiding in that, you know, just becomes a giant playground.
How would Dr. Krieger solve the problem?
Solve the icing problem down here?
Yes.
He would probably send out a batch of clones and and hobos with feeding bags strapped around them just with ice. Or with salt, I mean. With salt chunks and crystals just to spread them around. So you see just all these Kriegers and also the homeless population would suddenly be salting your roads.
So when are we going to see the Lucky Yates Variety Hour with puppets?
Man, you know what? I've got so many, puppet TV show ideas kicking around that I cannot, I'm pretty convinced I have adult ADD too, because I can't lock on one. Like, I can't sit down and focus on all right, I'm going to go with this one. I'm going to develop it, build it up into a pitch and do it out. Hopefully sooner than later, but I just got to lock it in and really get one going. We do these things down here called puppet slams, which are, you actually might have them up there. The puppet community is pretty tight, especially on this continent. They're short little, it's like a collection of 7-minute little puppet shorts and stuff, and it's great, and I think it would make an amazing television show.
Well, speaking of great television shows, Archers airs Mondays on FX. Make sure you check your local listings for exact show times. Dr. Krieger, Lucky Yates, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Alrighty, cheers. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Well, that's our show for today. My thanks to Lucky Yates, my thanks to Brent Butt, and my thanks to Ben Johnstone from Biffy Clyro. Stay tuned for the show next week. We'll have author Roddy Doyle, CNN journalist John D. Suter, and musical guest the Pack AD. We're going to take you out with Biffy Clyro, Spanish Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye. Well, that's our show for today. My thanks to Lucky Yates, my thanks to Brent Butt, and my thanks to Ben Johnstone from Biffy Clyro. Stay tuned for the show next week. We'll have author Roddy Doyle, CNN journalist John D. Suter, and musical guest the Pack AD. We're going to take you out with Biffy Clyro, Spanish Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Struggle in your crown, don't fit, so vacate the throne and
painting.